education of our children doesn't begin and end at academia. There is a spiritual responsibility on each parent and teacher to nurture and train a young soul spiritually. This is called Chinuch. Join Rabbi G every Monday at 2 p.m. as he explores education and Chinuch for parents and teachers. Torah isn't education, it's transformation.
We are back, as we do every Monday, where we discuss education, we discuss chinuch, we discuss everything that we can learn about that will actually help us improve our lives, improve our surroundings, really be the people we want to be living in the world we want to live in. How do we influence ourselves, our families, our communities, and so much more that we can learn and we can achieve. Today, I actually am going to take a different route. And when I say different route, let's go a bit more into practical. So, as you know, last week we had a psychologist here on the show as well as other professionals discussing the stresses of the end of the year and exams, etc. And quite often we have doctors, psychologists, professionals, and you know that's a lot of intelligent discussions and a lot of important discussions, and we talk a lot about different theories and how do we make our lives better and improve ourselves. Yet, the world is shifting to more practical and to more a place of, okay, bottom line, how do I get myself moving? How do I get my life moving? How do I get my life on track? How do I reduce stress, increase functionality, and how do I make all of that happen? And more we're hearing more about life coaches that are in that profession, in that space. And for that, I actually invited today a life coach onto the show so we can discuss more from the practical side of things. So let's get to know her a bit. Good afternoon, Gabby Schulter. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. So Gabby, just let's start by introducing you and what you do and your work to the listeners before we start chatting.
All right, so my job entails very different to psychologists. I'm not a competition to them. I have been working with psychiatrists for 16, 17 years. I know the medication, never give advice, but do kick patients to, you know, if there's side effects, if you're not feeling comfortable before stopping, call your doctor, he's at your service. Big, big thing, just for drug compliance. But the thing about life coaching is I don't give advice. If I had to advise you on my shoe size, which is a 4, you're not going to be comfortable. It's not sustainable. You're not going to get the wow feeling, heck, I've achieved something. Just a really, really basic example. But
so what do you do?
I just open up the person, see what is it about. The first session is what I call a chemistry session.
Okay.
For instance, whether it is corporate, executive, or students right now, that I look at their weaknesses and their can-dos. And I say, okay, you've tried this. This didn't work. So how can we optimize on this? And I ask them and I stretch them, I challenge them. And then we have these to-dos or homework or actions until next week, because this is a process. It's not just a one-time session where they literally then the next time they say, you know what, this really worked. I did it. And I said, you know, it wasn't me. You did it. And I'm proud of you. So okay. That in a nutshell.
So when we look at the practicality of mental health.
Yes.
A lot of times you do meet people that actually know what they need to do and have the awareness and have the clarity, but they actually can't get up and do it. They can't move themselves. They can't make it happen. So how do you step into that world of shifting between knowing the knowledge and implying the knowledge of how to get motivated and active, etc.? You're going to wait with that answer because we do have to take a short ad break. And when we come back, we will dive exactly into that question. Anything that you want to ask from a practical point of view of discussions for Gabby, for our coach, you can do so right after the break. And we will continue the discussion with any comments from our listeners, from you. Otherwise, we will answer that question exactly. So the way you can communicate with us, if you want to send us a WhatsApp, 061-895-1019. What do you think is a practical need from a life coach to help you in life? 061-895-1019.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chafem Chachinuch to Rabbi G. We are back. And if you're just joining now, I'm here with Gabby Schultz, who is a life coach and very fluent in the psychiatry world, and specifically focusing on life coach and practicality with patients that are, or clients that are, treated with psychiatry as well. And we're going to discuss the practical ways of how to take the theory into reality and make things happen. If there's anything you want to comment, you want to add, you want to say, and just curious what you think, how relevant is psychiatry today? Meaning, from the challenges that we have that we go to therapies for, or we go to counseling for, or life coaches, do you think that psychiatric challenges are a bigger factor, a smaller factor? Are we making it too much about it? Are we not appreciating it enough? Really, what is the psychiatry role in that space? 061-895-1019. Let us know what you think about that. And Gabby, we'll continue. So right before the break, I asked you about, you know, you mentioned about helping the client identify what their needs are and how they can take the next step, etc. You bring their world to them. And I asked you, well, a lot of times, if a client is dealing or battling with a psychiatric challenge, they do know what they need to do. They just can't get out of bed. They can't make it happen. Mm. So how would you address it then?
So my job is, I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a psychologist. I'm a life coach with that background and experience. I've also run a group at a psychiatric rehab center. And the biggest thing is take responsibility. I myself have a very serious psychiatric disorder, and I'm a shining example because I take my medication. Key is that if you don't find your medication effective enough and you feel like stopping, if you find you have side effects and maybe, I shouldn't be taking this, this is you taking responsibility. Pick up that phone, call the doctor. You've paid them. You are their patient or client. It's their responsibility, and they're qualified to get it right. Because my issue is, and this is a bit of a trigger warning for sensitive people, please, that within psychiatry, you don't take your medication and suicidality becomes quite a realistic thing, which is really so preventable. And
from that regard, because suicide is a very big topic in discussion and a very big concern for many people that we need to address. I don't think we're going to do that today on the show.
Sure.
But obviously that responsibility of finding the right medication, you know, you're saying that, but at the same time, psychiatrists generally are very busy people, and sometimes it does take a long time to get through and to adjust and to find, and I've had people waiting months to see a psychiatrist. So how do you deal with that in a practical way?
So it takes 3 to 4 months sometimes to see a good psychiatrist and get it right. So my advice is to see your GP. There are some GPs who are really, really great with psychiatry. And there are some even in our community here that are great with it. And I'll leave the names with you.
We're not going to do the names and
no, not
like
on
that.
You.
But,
no.
And yet also we do need to take into consideration that GPs are not psychiatrists, although I think very highly of GPs. But when you need a psychiatrist, you need a psychiatrist.
Absolutely.
But let's take a person who's been to a psychiatrist and their medication is working, and then they come to you, they're sitting in your office and they're just feeling stuck. What would you say the common challenges that you're seeing these days?
You know, the challenges are, you know, how long is a piece of string sometimes? And as I said, the first session's chemistry session. So I say, you know, first of all, they probably had a phone call with me and I see where they're coming from and what's going on. And I'm the kind of person, I just read between all the lines of emotions and everything going on. And then I become that mirror where I say, you know, you've actually already done this well. And I open up that space in their head that they hadn't thought of something. And they say, you know, I could actually try it this way. And I said, okay, let's talk about it. And for instance, one of the big tools is also, and I come back to it often, in the first three sessions maybe, I say, okay, give me the 10 best things about you. Okay. And I stretch them. And sometimes it takes half an hour. And I make them think. I don't want to hear about their blue eyes. And 2-3 sessions down the line, I go back to that and I said, look, we actually came up with 14 things, and you know.
That's quite fascinating and a lot, because I'm guessing that if I go downstairs now into the parking lot and try ask random people, can you tell me 10 qualities or great things about you? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people would struggle.
They do. And
still you always find a way to get that many, okay.
And I always cover it so they don't start counting once I'm writing. Okay. I'm a bit sneaky that way, maybe. But at the end of the day, there usually are 14, 15 things. The first two or three are difficult. And when I tell them, look, I see another two or three here, which I'm not telling you about, but they're right there. So, you know, give them to me. And they come up with it. And then we go through them sometimes and say, okay, so you're very calm under stressful situations and you don't like drama. It goes hand in hand in a way. But then I say, you know, you've actually just told me that you've had the situation, but 3 days ago, you told me you're calm under situations. Why did you not use your strength?
Okay, so... And what do they answer to that? Why don't they use their strength?
Being reflective and saying that, they actually reckon most of the time, and this is what coaching is really about, is that they realize, yeah, I can actually use that. Because, people don't think practically. They think emotionally. They get overwhelmed. And then when they see that there's a practical way of going about it, and then... 2 sessions later, they've actually achieved organizing, let's say, certain things, but in their way, which works for them, sustainable. So in other words, they're more productive. They also have this sense of achievement where they feel, you know, wow, I didn't think I had this ability. I didn't think I had this potential to actually grow.
Are people surprised when they figure out that they do have it within them and their ability to make things happen?
Absolutely.
Why are we so unaware of ourselves today?
Because we are so distracted.
Okay.
We're very distracted. We don't actually sit down with somebody neutral. I'm a safety bubble. I don't know your family. I don't know your friends. So they also often open up to me. I always say, you know, swear like a trooper if you need to. But
is there an aspect of therapists and specifically life coaches that are taking over from what we used to have 100 and 200 years ago as best friend of talking and connecting and verbalizing what you need to go through?
I think that's a big part. That it's almost like, geez, the way you're putting it now, paying me to be your best friend, but...
Yeah, we are. We're paying for our friendships.
But the thing is, I move you forward. I'm the one that is brutally honest, and I know how to word these things, and I also know how not to overstress you and make you over-emotional. I always ask them, please stop me if you feel like it's getting too much, because that's very important to the process. And I just love what I do, because I always see that sparkle happening in people's eyes. And when after the second session, what I like to say, they leave me and it looks like they've just grown an inch and they're sort of kind of now taking up their space again. And, you know, they come back.
And taking ownership and reflecting on their own life themselves.
Yes.
So is that the or let me ask from a different angle first. How did we reach this point that in a life of distractions and a life of stress and chaos, the first thing we threw out the window is ourselves, is the inner focus, is understanding about ourselves? Are we the least of priority to ourselves on our list? And before you answer, we will take a short break. And when we come back, we'll dive back into that. People keep asking, what's new at Chai FM? Well, quite a lot. New management, fresh energy, bigger ideas, and the same hosts who refuse to behave. Wednesday, November 19th, from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., it's the Chai fundraiser. One day, 12 hours, and a whole lot of community spirit. Join us for our Fuel the Frequency campaign and help us power Chai FM forward.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, we are back. I'm here with a fascinating discussion. I'm here with Gabby Scholter, who is a life coach and has been very around in the field of mental health and psychiatry, worked with doctors, etc., but as a life coach. And right before the break, it sounded very clear that what we're seeing today is that in the race of life, when we have to drop something, we're dropping ourselves first. And why is it? Why do you find that we're the least priority for our own well-being?
I think society tells us what shows success is not the kindness we often show to each other or oneself, but about the achievements at work, the marks at school or university, or how great is your relationship doing on the outside probably, and how well are you doing. But I don't think even at school, are we ever taught, how do I look after myself? How do I actually, when I am anxious, how do I know where did it come from? Do I actually pause, reflect, and say, hey, this is not okay the way I was treated?
Why do we need to be taught that? Isn't that something that we should have naturally?
I think the world takes it away from us. We are so distracted, I said a little earlier, because the world tells us how we should feel. And if we don't feel that way, then the thing is, we feel inadequate. It then starts with lower self-esteem, lower self-respect. And I find that probably you kind of just, we all live in this whirlwind of a world. We have news 24/7 on 10 channels, and it's all bad. And
Which, by the way, we don't, it's a different separate topic. We don't really have news. We have, there's like 1% news and 99% of personal opinions and interpretations,
yes,
presented as news, which is definitely putting us in a very stressful mindset. And that is what's taking, is that the noise background that is taking us away from just thinking about ourselves and what's right and wrong?
You know, I completely agree with you with the 1% news and then opinion, because, but there is a lot of people out there that will take the news by the letter. And yes, the truth is always somewhere in the middle, in whatever you look at. However, I feel that kids today are probably more exposed to mental health help. And the adults, you know, you always have two, maybe three generations living under one roof. And the way that we grew up is not the way our kids are now growing up. I'm not even touching on cell phones.
Correct.
But I'm just talking about with my mental health, I would have loved to have studied medicine, really. If I win the lottery, I'm in med school tomorrow.
Okay. One day, we'll get there. Okay.
But the thing is, if I would have had a diagnosis and the right medication and help, you know, that would have facilitated that in a far better way. And I recognized even in my own son, he's 24 now, that I saw it when he was 7. The school didn't even say anything, that there was inattentive ADHD.
Okay.
And made an appointment with a good psychiatrist. I can often get in a little earlier. However,
being in the field.
Yes.
Okay.
Despite that, I saw it. It helped him. And kids also, if you're not treated for your mental health, that brain grows up with a chemical imbalance.
Okay. So before we go down that route,
yes,
we can't ignore physical health as well, because a lot of our mental status is about the way we get the balance of the chemicals in the brain and producing a lot of times from actual physical health. So if we're living in a society today that our kids don't walk anywhere, we always take a car. I remember one of my children, walked into a building with him and there was an elevator there, and he was like, wow, an elevator, it's rare, there's so many floors. Meaning most of our houses here are one story. We don't go the steps, we barely move. Mm-hmm. Obviously that affects the brain and the mental capacity, mm-hmm, and the balance of the chemicals we have in our brain. Are we actively enough focusing and being active? Are we making sure that we walk enough, we run enough, we have enough steps? And not only with our Discovery Watch, just physical health, of balance of eating and sleeping and movement. Is there any emphasis there that we are currently lacking?
You know, I find that a very interesting question, because with our weather here, specifically here in Joburg as well, there is so much mountain biking, cycling, swimming, running happening, that there's also what something I always find, that if you're in primary school, that class should have a 400-meter run before the first class. And not to win, they need to stay as a group. The boys get the adrenaline out of the system, because everybody has a different morning, and they can apply themselves all far better. And there's been studies around this as well.
So why is that not happening?
You know, teachers are there to teach the subjects. I also work with a school. I don't want to call it special needs, but it's the kind of school that identifies, you're a fish, I'm not going to tell you to climb the tree. That's something that Albert Einstein once said. But they'll identify, okay, you're a tuna, and this is the kind of water you need. And that's what they facilitate. Not a cheap school, but I work with them. And they're really successful.
Okay. So obviously there is that whole question about traditional schooling, etc. But when we look at just the physical movement, you know, you mentioned about the schools are there to teach 100%, but where are we as parents, as families? Mm-hmm. You know, when I, for a period of time, was walking my child to school, I can't tell you how many people stopped their car to offer me a lift, because the assumption was that something's wrong with my car. It didn't occur to people that I'm actually walking my child to school. That is not a thing. Why isn't it? Where are we? And maybe there needs to be potentially a shift in the life coach professional and therapy professional to shifting to self-care and to not only working one-on-one, but actually bringing the message and getting parents on board, getting communities on board, getting people on board, creating a reality that is suitable for mental health.
You're absolutely right. Physical training, it kind of lowers the cortisol, the adrenaline, and you get that positive endorphins going, obviously. All right, so that's very important. I once went to my psychiatrist, and meds were fine, but she gave me a script, folded it, and when I walked out, she says, continue doing yoga.
Okay.
So I never forget that. I was really like, yep, okay, noted.
But it is important. It's important that we see that. So, okay, we kvetched enough, as they say, for the show. And let me ask you this. So the mom, dad sitting in the car now listening to us, hearing the show, what can they do tomorrow morning to start focusing on little changes that will create the mental space and the physical space for a better, healthy journey?
That's a very good question. And that's a very big question, I must say. No, but it's an important question, that I think judge your child also by what they can do right. And I find often, don't berate and judge your child. I grew up with a mother who made a point of never judging. And she talked to us as an adult. And what she got back is an adult, not a child.
Okay.
I also find that the little things, when you feel you've got a child that could do better, start by rather looking for little positive things and say, you know what, I've just noticed this, you know, I like it. You know, keep it real, don't go, oh, wow, but just little things. And then you'll see how they just grow back into their skin.
So what you're saying is, if we want to look at step one of creating a wholesome space or positivity, whatever you focus on grows. So if you're going to focus on the good, it's going to grow. If you're going to focus on the negative, it's going to grow.
Yep.
So if you call out your child's mistakes or problems or challenges, that will grow.
Yep.
And if you identify their successes, that will grow.
Yep.
Okay. That's something so simple and yet easier said than done. Why?
You notice your child all of a sudden chews with the mouth closed. And you say, you know, I like that. I've just noticed, you know, keep going. Thumbs up. Like, make it part of your day-to-day family dynamic. I had to hospitalize someone and came back into the family, but the family dynamic facilitated the hospitalization of the 18-year-old. So I'm now mediating with the parents, and all of a sudden there's rules. And he calls his home a dictatorship. But he's actually growing up, finally, because he's also getting positive reinforcement by being respectful. The father no longer is, you know, he more of a father, more of a human.
Okay, so you're talking about the larger family dynamic, per se, of how to create that balance within life. So going back to where we started about the challenges that we actually are facing today, and we obviously, as a discussion, we always want to be relevant and focused. And so, is there a pattern or something that you see that your clients come in with? You say, okay, this is something that is very common at our time of life that we can and we need to shift and focus on, and we can do that relatively easy.
You know, you also said something earlier, and I'll just pull this right into this particular question as well, is that people don't look after themselves, and people need to realize that in order to grow, and they need to look, life's a journey. If it didn't work, leave it behind. Don't judge yourself. Look at what worked and how can we optimize this. But people don't know how. They don't get that. And I think that would really grow a society of can-doers.
You know, you talk about look behind and see what worked, what didn't work. One of the bigger challenges we are facing is when people have a fear of a mistake and fear of doing something wrong. And somehow we presume that making a mistake is is something broken within me or something not working within me. And the simple concept of, the famous saying that we say, I never failed in life. I either succeeded or learnt. Why, and I am aware of the whole school side of things, so let's leave the schools out of this. As families, at homes, as parents, as communities, what can we do to embrace the mistakes and the learning from it instead of identifying it as a full-on disaster?
I think there's a good slogan for that. If in doubt, ask mom and dad, or if in doubt, ask the boss. Not saying make it their problem. However, you say, hey, I need help with this. There's nothing wrong with that. However, you're going to get to your goal quicker.
Okay, so not being worried about getting the goal, which is, you know, quite its own challenge, considering specifically in a world that it's so easy to get information that people don't feel that comfortable to seek that help and that knowledge. But I'm talking about after they made a mistake. So somebody has made a mistake, and they're called out for it. Many times we'll see people just fall apart over being called out for a mistake instead of saying, okay, now I know what to do better. Why do we fall apart, and what can we look at to identify differently?
We fear judgment. We feel we are less. It's almost like every mistake, take a piece of paper, draw a stick man on it, and everything negative you ever hear, tear a piece off. You know, you're not great. Ugh, I'm not happy with your marks. I'm not happy with how you manage this meeting. And then you've got this tiny piece left of the stick figure, and that is what's left of this particular person. Because they never hear, you know, okay, this meeting was good, but maybe we can manage to do it better next time. Let me help you.
Because so you're saying that when we criticize, basically we're not giving productive advice of how we would want it. We're just saying how we don't want it. And that's creating stress and fear within people.
Exactly. And anxiety, it can cause burnout. It can cause depression. It can cause people at work all of a sudden they need 12 hours to do what they used to do in 8 hours, and they're burning the candle on both sides. And that is something I'm currently seeing a lot of, because everybody, you know, let's just face it, democracy is one thing, but at work, even at school, there's a hierarchy, and you always want to impress the one above you.
Okay, everywhere in family dynamic, or there shouldn't be a democracy there, or everywhere there's a hierarchy. Okay.
Yes, and I find that when I still was in corporate, I used to say, okay, if in doubt, call the boss. And before I make a mistake, and if you did make a mistake, own up to it. And if someone does own up to a mistake, then rather say, you know, thanks for letting me know. Let's sort this out together. Don't judge.
and be able to see from there, you know, kind of what this next step needs to be. Okay, we do need to take our next break and hear what the advertisers have an offer for Chai FM and for our listeners. And then when we come back, we'll continue into this discussion, a short break or just an opportunity to hear more. And we'll be right back.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, and I'm here with Gabi, who is a life coach, and we are discussing, you know, all kinds of aspects of challenges and difficulties that we see in order to improve our life and our journey. And we can't ignore the one big thing. And we are currently in stress season, as we would call it, starting from September, end of year, schools, students. I know we did speak about it last week. But your take on the stress and management on every aspect, from students to parents to family supporters, therapists, etc., Where would you position everybody's role when it comes into managing this end-of-year stress?
The thing is, everybody's got different ways of dealing with stress, and we were mentioning sport earlier on as well.
Okay.
However, there's also, you are at work and you've got a boss, that's not really great, okay? So what I do is I help. Often you've got to manage your boss, unfortunately.
Okay.
It's like, I say the word perception management, all right?
Okay.
And to sometimes keep certain things off your back that are not necessary, that we then absorb, and as earlier, you know, you feel judged and berated maybe, and when you've done nothing wrong and just done your job according to how you do it, because that's what works. You can't do the job. Yeah.
But at the same time, you do need to fit in with the scores, and you need to fit in with the expectations of work, expectations of school and management. Mm. So it's not really only about how you've done it or how you feel right about it.
Mm. So there's KPIs for, obviously, if you are at work, key performance indicators that probably companies have, and they do reviews and how you've done according to the last check-in and so on. There's students' exams at the moment.
Okay.
And they're all tired and fatigued. So the difference also between tired...
I was going to say, how do you define the difference between tired and fatigued?
Tired is you are just tired and mentally exhausted. But fatigue is also more physical and also something that probably can cause you a little bit more anxiety because you can't get out of bed in the morning. It feels like you've got this brick on your chest.
So you're saying fatigue is not a physical tiredness, it's a mental tiredness, and... just being tired is physically you're tired at the end of the day?
Yeah.
Or the opposite?
No, it was the opposite around, sorry.
Okay.
So fatigue is like this whole body and probably caused by tiredness mentally. And I always talk about to my coaches at the moment about don't break your brain. How are you going to de-stress, and what at home do you do that you just switches you off?
Okay.
And I lie in bed and I'm on my cell phone or I watch Netflix and I'm like, no. Does that switch your brain off? I'm not saying you got to go meditate necessarily. It's not for everybody. But there are certain dynamics that we're also not aware that cause stress. And once you calm your mind down, whether it is prayer, whether it is just seeing within yourself, I've had a couple of coaches where I say, until next week, please, look up self-awareness. And they come back with a couple of lines, and they said, you know, I never realized this. And I said, so how is it going to work for you? What are you going to do about it? Tell me
more.
How are
you going to take it to the practical side of things and realistic? But then, we could talk about all of this, and then the student will come and say, yeah, but I do have matric coming up, and I do have endless exams, and I do have the stress of, you know, my whole future based on my results.
Mm.
How would you recommend they manage and handle that stress?
Take time. You know, last week I had a coach and I said, you know what, first time I'm going to give you advice, just bunk that Friday. Tell mom you're not feeling well.
Oh boy.
But it was
before all the SMSs come in, it's that's Gabby's recommendation.
In defense of that is that
I'm joking.
It wasn't subjects, it wasn't exams, it was just study sessions for that Friday at school that she could have done at home. just to give you perspective, sorry. Okay.
No problem. Okay. So basically you're saying make sure that you're looking after yourself and your well-being.
Yeah.
And manage to do it. You know, when we are stressed, mm-hmm. we tend to go to our phones and we tend to go to technology, and specifically students. And, you know, you talk about managing their needs and potentially going to sleep at a normal hour and making sure they're eating and sleeping and exercising, etc. But it's almost questioned how realistic that is with technology around us. I mean, everybody knows that we shouldn't go to bed with phones, and everybody does. And everybody knows that we shouldn't be wasting X amount of time, and we all do. So how do we give them practical advice, not advice that they sit and say, yeah, you're right, and then nothing comes out of it?
Parent control on kids' phones
is
something I'm seeing to be used and quite successful. And I'm dealing with a lot of ADHD, and then screen time obviously is not a good thing often, or to a certain extent.
I mean, we haven't even touched on sensory and the regulation around it and what the screen actually does and the occupation of the brain. Okay.
And then also, if you need that nap, don't drink coffee. Just take a nap.
Okay. So just be aware of what actually works for you or doesn't work for you, et cetera. Throughout the years that you've been working and around this stress time, are you seeing yearly an increase in mental health challenges?
I think I see more recognition, and I can't anymore and I have a mental health issue because the stresses facilitate the need for help.
So you see an increase in awareness or an increase that is making it show?
I think that the stresses bring out, because if you are a mental health predisposition, right, then you are far more likely to have something not right, and you realize and you go to the GP and you say, look, I just can't anymore. And that's usually towards end of the year. And all the doctors know from September it starts, because everybody's pushing, they're tired and going towards end of year, and they're just a little bit more thin skin. Once they get put onto medication, maybe they take 2 consultations to agree to it. And then they find, you know, phew, I wish I would have had this years ago.
As a mental coach, so let me ask you like this. How important is it that if you are on medication and if you are in the mental health in world, okay, of whatever your needs are at the time, how important is that your coach actually is familiar with the psychiatric world and the medications, or it doesn't matter, they can motivate you regardless?
I think the knowledge should be there. Well, you know, everybody has their niche and everybody attracts their kind of client and patient, and that suits in a way the universe's kind of energy. But I think it is absolutely crucial, and I have a huge respect for psychologists. However, I've in fact been asked by some specialists to, don't you want to do a group for psychologists? Because, you know, it's just, there are so many different antidepressants. You get 100 depressed patients, they're all different, they all need a different regime. And you can't just, because one works for these two, it doesn't mean it works for the next 5.
So you're saying the awareness is important. It's actually quite important when we talk from that. I could say that in my team, definitely had one of the leading psychiatrists come and explain it all to the therapist and teach and get everybody with some awareness. So definitely important to have that knowledge. I get it. So you're saying really the life coach will adapt somehow, that the people that have certain needs will go to people that are aware and familiar with those needs and are able to support from that regard. Okay, well, let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue into this discussion.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, and just towards the end of this hour and this discussion, and fascinating things, I just want to ask you one more question, and then we'll go to our last question of the show. So, you know, you speak a lot about mental health and the coaching you do with that. If anybody's listening to us and they have a friend with mental health challenges, whatever that would be, and they want to be a support, they just don't know how, what would you recommend of awareness for them to be a friend, a support, a caring community member, to without being inappropriate or invasive, but really to know what to say?
You know, a hug goes a long way often, especially if they're close to you. Often advice is sometimes comes across a little bit judgmental. It depends on the relationship between the two people. However, it's also important to just listen. But listen, process, understand, and then respond. Not listen to speak. There's a big difference in that. And women are very big on listening, interrupting, and just to speak. Hate to say it, it's just something. Yeah.
You can say it, I can't, okay?
Yeah.
So, okay, so just be there, give a hug, any support you can, and
yeah.
Don't say too much, rather don't, just bring, listen.
And then just say, you know, maybe you need a little bit of help. What help do you think would work best for you? Like if I had to now talk to a friend and I wasn't doing the job I did, I would say, you know, do you think maybe you go to your GP and have a chat? And GPs often have good references also for therapists, or they send them to me. Also, it depends. You know, if you don't want to see a psychiatrist, GP, or a psychologist, then I get the referrals because I meet people in a coffee shop. The ambient noise over coffee, it facilitates a certain calm. It's less threatening, hate to say it this way, and less formal. So they open up. But I think also distraction is sometimes a really good thing. Take this person. And, you know, if they don't want to go somewhere, because that's also depression, you know, they need a bit of that energy off the couch and just say, come.
To help them push forward.
Yeah.
And we do have to start wrapping up the show today. I'm just going to ask you the last question and final question for today's show, which I ask every one of our guests here. What do you wish and hope we knew or did different for a better future for our community or society?
Just be kind.
Okay.
Just be kind.
We need to know about that, I guess.
Everybody, you know, what is kindness? And I think people, I know not everybody is physical, but hugs, you know, 30 years ago, we never hugged as much as we do these days.
Okay, so be kind, nice to people.
Listen to people.
And support each other as a nation.
Yeah,
and
listen.
As a society.
Yeah.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You are Gabi Schulte, right? Gabi Schulte. You are a life coach, very fluent in the psychiatry world. And thank you for being with us today. Thank you for taking the time and the discussion. This is a very important conversation to have, so really appreciate it. Thank you, Senna, for putting the interview in place. Thank you, Craig, for managing the show perfectly. Thank you to our listeners that are here week after week, Monday 2 to 3. And in between, then they have great shows throughout the whole week. So thank you, and we will be back next week, Monday 2 to 3, with a new topic, a new discussion. In the meantime, stay safe and be kind to yourself, as Gabi said.